Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Roke Report podcast, where we talk about all things Sunderland, or as I like to call it, the most depressing football club on the planet. I'm lost for words, really, as to what's going on at the moment. But anyway, I'm Johnny, your host for today on Roke Report. I am joined by the normal host of Roke Report, Alex, but he's going to be on the other side of the desk today. Hello, Alex.
I feel wrong.
Yeah.
I feel like I've been usurped. I feel like that scene in The Lion King, and you've just knocked my claws off the cliff and I've fell into a horde of bison racing across the landscape
Long
below
live
me.
The king.
Yeah. That's what it feels like right now.
Yeah. And we're joined also by Anthony Gare.
Yeah, wait a second. Say something like, "Oh, I'm happy to be here."
Yes. So yesterday, the appointment of Phil Parkinson continues to prove to be a terrible decision by the club. And we are now 11th in the table, 11th in the third division of English football. Fell to a 1-0 defeat away at Gillingham, courtesy of a late Connor Ogilvie goal. You should never allow a defender that much time on the ball, by the way. Can I just say that? Like, that was ridiculous. In case you've been living under a rock, keeping away from all Sunderland-related things, well done you. It's a wise decision.
Congratulations.
That's the second time we've played Gillingham this season. Both times we've lost 1-0. Wonderful. Really, really wonderful.
Third time, actually. We drew the initial FA Cup tie.
Oh, that as well. Oh, yeah. Yes. Great. And
we
haven't conceded. Point being, we haven't beat Gillingham this season. Wonderful. But we're going to start right at the start of the week. We're going to go through things chronologically. Charlie Methven is leaving his role at Sunderland Football Club. He'll be stepping down next Thursday, as far as I'm aware. Still will hold a 6% stake in the club. He's the second board member to leave this season, along with Tony Davidson. Juan Satori is back in the country now, so there is that, I guess. What that does, I don't know, but he's here. So, Charlie Methven, he said he was leaving for personal and political reasons, or political or business reasons even, because he works in a political environment. But do we believe what he's saying here?
Well,
no.
No? Okay.
Case closed, next question.
Maybe it is for personal reasons, but I'm sure there's probably more to it than just that, you know?
The web's been spun, hasn't it?
It's, yes.
There's a lot of debauchery, yeah. I'd imagine. There's more going on at the club than we all know about. It's so blatantly obvious now.
Yes.
And then someone sends us a picture of some Sunderland footballers enjoying a McDonald's and a Starbucks, and people absolutely fuming about it, Alex.
I would like to get to that when we get to that, because in the interest, as Johnny says, of working chronologically,
yes.
If you bombard me with too many infuriating things at once, I am going to implode. Yes. So I suppose if to answer your original question, John, in a bit more detail, I think with Charlie Methven, business reasons and political reasons, as you've said there, are never going to be mutually exclusive. Ooh. They are always going to be intertwined. But do I think that the recent events have sort of reinforced his desire or his need to move away? I think absolutely. I think if there are family reasons behind him moving, I can understand that being the case. And I don't presume he's lying. I do. Mm-hmm. I do think that there will be some truth in that.
Yeah.
But I do think that obviously the situation at the club and how things have sort of fallen by the wayside on a PR front will have compounded the issue. I think there is definitely a case to be made there.
Yeah, he's obviously one of those who we all know he's a good talker, and he'll say stuff and he'll be like motivated behind what he says. And then when things don't go right, he does it all again. And we fall into that trap again of mm-hmm. being like, oh, you know, he really has the club at heart and stuff. And then he comes out with stuff like calling the fans parasites. And it's like,
Well,
don't do yourself any favours, do you?
I mean, if we're to say this is the end of Methven's tenure at Sunderland, and if I'm going to look back, I'm not going to take the view that everything he's done at the club is awful and, you know, good riddance, etc. I don't personally think like that. Whether or not that puts me in the minority or majority is immaterial. I think when I look at Charlie Methven and look at what he's done, I went to the talking at Townend, I think it was a month ago now, and a lot of the things that Charlie proposed, and there was substance behind them. He wasn't just talking, he was actually acting. He has done a lot of things for the club that I think are with the club's best intentions and are in the best intentions of any club in the position that we're in. That being said, there have been many things that he's said and that have been said on record, have been recorded, have been noted by the fans that are quite frankly just absolutely terrible things to say to fans of our demographic. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been many comments pertaining to the working class context of Sunderland, to the fans themselves and their negativity. And I think a lot of that was very insensitive. So I think if a lot of fans are unhappy with him and those are their parting memories of him, then I don't begrudge them for that. I think sometimes you do, you make your bed and you lie in it. But if I'm looking at it objectively, I think while things haven't gone swimmingly on the PR front, and I think it will end on a disappointing note, quite obviously, there's definitely being an attempt to take the club in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it hasn't all gone according to plan, and too much has been said to overshadow the good things that have been done, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's ambitious, and that's no problem having ambition. It's good to be wanting to be part of a club which has success. And unfortunately, after the playoff final, maybe you just, I don't know, it felt like you just lost interest because you didn't get what you hoped in the first season. I think maybe he's just out of his depth as well. And some of the comments he comes out with, it's like I say, you just don't say that to football fans.
No, the PR, Stuart and Charlie on the PR front both made blunders of very different types, but ultimately both were just very just sort of, obviously, with hindsight, we can see that they were terrible. When Stuart came onto Twitter and he was responding to fans who were having queries, he was arranging to pick up fans who, you know, buses had broke down on away days. We thought it was fantastic. We thought it was a revelation because we'd had almost a decade of Ellis Short and his Stonewall, you know, of just like
nothing.
I believe it was Martin last week said on the pod here that, you know, Short did two interviews in a decade, which is nothing at all. You know, Martin Bain was infamously distant, apart from when he would flash his watch on the documentary. Ooh. But, you know, like when we first got Stuart on Twitter and on sort of like in the foreground of fan interaction, it was wonderful. But we soon realised, I think very quickly that when, you know, like it became what was a very much a double-edged sword. It was great when things were going well. We could see Stuart right there. He could dispel rumours like that. He could answer fans' questions immediately. He could really show how engaged he was. But then that works both ways, because obviously when things weren't going well, and he would say quite reactive and quite sort of like, you know, negative things back to fans who were unfairly criticising him, of course. But that being said, it's just not an image that a chairman of a club's definitely to promote. So with hindsight, we can see that it was probably best to not have him on Twitter at all and to perhaps bridge the gap between fans and club in more professional and savvy ways. But again, you know, this is a learning point for us as much as it was for him. But with Charlie, like we've already said, the issue is more so for him is that he would say things that were quite baffling at times. And we often thought, where on earth has that come from? I thought you were on our side here, Charlie. You know, you can't refer to this being classic Macam negativity or saying that we're parasites because pubs have decided to stream games. I mean, obviously it's not legal and it's not right, but...
Oh yeah, classic Macam negativity. Yeah. It's like, well, I mean, I think we're probably entitled to that negativity over the years. But don't you think we've been through enough crap, like, you know, going through the Championship season, the Premier League relegation battles? I think we're entitled to a bit of negativity.
Yeah, we don't need that, bottom line, isn't it? And if you were to look back through, like, you know, like Charlie Methven's greatest hits, as far as his like quotes have gone, and then it doesn't make for very nice reading. A lot of them, you know, there are things that have been said about the club about the fans of the club that, you know, are just downright offensive and are completely untrue. But, you know, he's gone now, so whatever happens now happens. So
Anthony, how would you sum up his time at the club?
Delightful. No, we've not had the best of times, have we? Regardless of whether it's under Ellis or under Charlie and Stuart. But I think with Charlie and Stuart at the helm, we've had a significant turnaround in sort of fans' interactivity, as Alex says. We went through a stage where the fans and the club were completely divided, like they are now, I suppose. But under Ellis Short, nobody knew what was going on at the club. He was mm-hmm. looking to sell, and he wasn't dishing out money at all to the club. Whereas under Charlie and Stuart, everything's been a bit more translucent. But he has said a few ill-advised things, which just baffles beyond belief. Seeing as he was the guy mm-hmm. brought in for the PR guy, wasn't he? He was the guy who was brought in to make the PR side of the club. Yeah.
Who ironically has been the one who said things that have been the dagger in the brass's coffin, really, hasn't it?
But yeah.
It's quite funny when you look at it, because it's almost ironic when you reflect, because as you said there, and what we had with Short and Bain and, you know, all of the gang from back in the days, you had this like almost, but at the end, like a very like imperialist disconnected view of like the men in the high castle and then like the common folk who were hard done by, you know, what felt like an oppressive rule. And we went from that to almost having people who we were told were like amongst us, but then over time they've almost like morphed the club back into the disconnect because they realised that there were loads of issues that come with being connected. And I feel like almost at times I've almost thought, I don't know if Stuart and Charlie have the stomach to deal with the criticism that they're getting. It's almost like that. It's like Animal Farm, isn't it? You know, I don't know if we've read that, but a bit of a...
The George Orwell thing. Sorry, I was thinking about the other film.
It's almost that, isn't it? Yeah, it's like, you know, like we drive out Mr. Jones, we drive out Ellis Short and Martin Bain, you know, pitchforks in hand. The animals reclaim the lands, Stewie and Charlie come in. But then over time, obviously, when they realise there are issues, it morphs back into what we had before, which I think really is where we're at now. You know, Stewart's nowhere to be seen or heard from. Charlie's gone. I'm sorry to say it's morphing back into a disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, we wouldn't really have seen this coming. I don't think they would have, but ultimately I would have to point the finger at their naivety, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'm not afraid, I don't know.
I would probably, I'd just say it states that the club's in a crisis, that he's walked out, that's it, him done. He knows there's something else that is quite significantly going to hit the fan, and he wants away beforehand. That's just pure speculation and conjecture, but it just terrifies me that this bloke who was completely sold the fans when he came here. He says, this is the, we want to make this club great again. Went all Donald Trump, didn't he? he decided he wanted to make everything great again, bring the fans back into the club. And all of a sudden, when things go wrong, he walks out. Keeps his stake, mind, but walks out.
Yeah, which is, I still don't understand that, but okay. Yeah. Best of luck to Charlie. He has provided some good times for the club, as I say, maybe a bit out of his depth. Yeah, the sort of the southern personality doesn't really fit with some of the northern football fans and the northern culture, and you know that's why some of the stuff he said we didn't take that maybe in a way that he would have hoped. But anyway, off he goes. But off you go, Charlie. I'll see you whenever. I guess if you might come back again or something. Yeah,
thanks for the time, Charlie. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the days.
Unfortunately, it's time to talk about the misery of Sunderland versus Charlie.
Thank you very much for listening to the Roker Report podcast. We thoroughly appreciate your patronage once again.
We could just end it right here and just avoid Gillingham. But this isn't going to be particularly positive. So if you don't like negative complaining and stuff like that, well, then you can tune out now. But let's do the three-word reviews. We have 298 replies to this. I'm not going to read all nearly 300 of them. Most of them suggest they want Phil Parkinson out. That's the majority of them. But some of these other ones are quite interesting. Michael Dunn says, disillusioned with football. Neil Graney says, any probationary period. Bilbo Ballbaggins says, best ever references, and I love that Twitter handle. Graham Field needs to protest. Mark Carrick says, Parkinson out now. Neil Philip Thornton says, hello, League 2. Okay. let's hope not. Adam Guest, underlying performance data. Kay Yenneth, championship season vibes. I definitely agree with that one. And also, I think from Anthony, we had the one about he's got to go.
Is
what you said, and I've got to say, agree with that one as well. So, yeah.
If I make three really sad noises, can we count that as a three-word review as well?
Mm. Yes. This is Alex's three-word review.
I'm not going to.
Oh, I've like built it all up there.
Yeah, well, I was speaking hypothetically. I'm not really going to do that.
Okay.
Maybe I will at some point, and I just won't tell you I'm going to do it.
I want to know your thoughts on the lineup, lads. We know we had this, John McLaughlin goal. Okay, so that's not really anything weird. But then he has five at the back: McLaughlin, Willis, Ozturk, Flanagan, DeBuck. Led by their Dobson, 09, Mark McNulty, and Will Grigg. What a wonderful lineup that is. Anyway, five at the back. So please tell me, how did you react when you saw this team sheet?
Well, I have to disagree with Johnny. I didn't see five at the back. I saw about seven at the back when I read that team
well,
sheet.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
That was the most negative team, the most dire negative team I've ever seen any Sunderland team set up with. We have seen some infamously bad lineups over the years. We had the weakened team against Hull. We've had various others. But this takes the cake. What an absolutely abysmal side that is. I knew when I saw that team that Parkinson was setting up for a draw, a bloody draw away at Gillingham. We are a team that at the start of the season were touted for a potential 100-point season. And I know that Methven backtracked on that comment at the Talking to Town End. However, the fact of the matter is, it was said on air for all to hear. How far have we come since then? How far down have we slipped? How much has our ambition disintegrated?
Well, if you just look at the opposition, like last year, we played Gillingham twice, scored 8 goals against them.
Yeah, we absolutely. I mean, I'm not going to pretend that Gillingham were a particularly good side last season, and they're not a particularly good side now.
I think they're probably better off last year.
They're a very pedestrian League One team, though, and they have been for a while, and that's no disrespect to them. That's just where they've been statistically. But we look at our team here, and I mean, for God's sake, like, that lineup, how many defenders do you need to play? How many good players? Well, I say good. How many potentially creative players do you need on the bench? You can only bring three on.
Yeah.
You know, why are they all sat on the bench? Why are you setting up like that? Why are we now back to five at the back? We knew from the start of the season that doesn't work with the players we've got. We saw Ross try that.
Yeah.
It didn't work. He had all pre-season and he had the first three games of the season to try it and try and embed it. And it was an absolute disaster. The players had no idea what they were doing. If they didn't know then, why would they know now when we've got a new manager trying it again for the first time with even more players who don't seem to get it? What on earth was the idea? A loss was inevitable. And that's the first time I've said that while being in League One. And it's an absolute damning indictment of just how far we've fallen. You look at this team and you think, right, we are not setting up. There is no creativity in that team. The only semblance of attacking capacity is from Luke O'Neill, who, you know, is not your most offensively oriented player in our system. You've got McNulty, who one, doesn't really seem in shape and two, is injury prone. And Grigg, who can't hit a barn door. Mm-hmm. So what, you know, you can put another bloke up front next to Grigg, you're still lumping long balls to him with no creativity. There's still no one to work the ball through the middle and try and open a team up.
Okay, having said that, we did have a goal disallowed. Charlie White did net a ball in from a Will Grigg assist. Yes, believe it or not, Will Grigg did contribute in a positive manner to an extent to this Sunderland team. Obviously, we didn't get the goal and it would have papered over the cracks, as they say, if we did get the 1-1 draw. The frustrating thing here is we have Ross Gregory on the post-match comments, head of football at GPI Media. We just had to see that set play through, and if we got a point, we'd have taken that all day.
Pathetic. Utterly pathetic comment. I'm sorry, Parkinson, but that is an absolutely spineless, soulless comment to make. I don't care if you were brought in because you were the cheapest option. I do not care about any of that. Ultimately, you are here at a club that is aiming to get out of this division. I mean, yes, blah, 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 we're a League One club, okay, we can happy clap all day on that one, say, you know, we need to just accept where we are. But ultimately, no, okay, we are a League One club, but we are aiming to be a club getting out of League One as soon as possible.
Carry on the way we are. We will be out of League One into League Two.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, I mean, you know,
we thought gone were the days of relegation battles. No, they're still happening.
No, yeah, because we can't. You know, that's 8 losses from 12. It's utterly pathetic.
Still 1,000-1. We'll bet 365 to get relegated if you fancy it.
Hey, it's not a terrible shout. Make some maximum coin off it.
Well, that would also mean that you'd want us to get relegated, and that's not what we want. So we're not going to do that.
Yeah, but I mean, taking it all day. This
Take
is Gillingham.
Point all day at Gillingham. Wonderful.
Ooh, a point against Gillingham. That's great, that, lads. A point against Gillingham. You know what? There's no other way to say it. Just Just a point against Gillingham? Are you having a laugh? A point against Gillingham?
So, Anthony, you what would was take your reaction day? To the team sheet anyway? Didn't ask
you. No, my reaction was this, pretty much exactly the same as Alex's. Looking at it going, there was eight defenders in that team. Eight players who will just sit back and hope for the ball. So you look at the team and he's set up for a draw, isn't he? I mean, there is no doubting about that. And the comments afterwards have stated that he is definitely set up for that draw. What can you say about that? I mean, the team itself are fully capable of getting the result against Gillingham. It's the managerial ineptitude of Mr. Parkinson, who seems to just have everybody sat behind the ball all game. And it's the fact that, every time I saw Will Grigg get the ball, it was in his own half. He was sat, he wasn't getting on the 40-yard long balls. Mm-hmm. He wasn't getting on the end of anything. Yeah. And just we're all sitting there going, why is this happening? What is going on? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, going back to my three-word review, he's got to go. He has to go. Yeah. There is no defending anything. The way this club is being run right now by that manager, there is no defending it.
Mm-hmm. No.
Absolutely not. And, yeah, I mean, I'm not normally someone who wants a manager out this
season. Oh, me either. I'm not a knee-jerk reactor either.
I always say, give him a transfer window, give him time to put his own team together. Mm-hmm. But
we said this, Johnny. We said this on the last pod, though. It was I believe it was Chris Weatherspoon who said it, and the point stands. But you have to justify getting to January. Like, you can't just say to a manager, "Oh, but he needs January," because, like we said then, if you're saying he needs to get there before we can really judge him, you're consigning the first 2 months of his tenure to a predetermined failure.
We could be in big trouble by the time January comes around. That's a long time.
We are already a light year away from promotion.
Yeah, see, like I say, normally I wouldn't be someone who wants manager out after such a short time, but this guy, like, who's going to want to sign for us, really, at this stage, considering where we're going to be? And, I mean, the Parkinson obviously is to blame, but the players as well, down tools. And it's a disgrace that professional footballers get paid to play football and they don't try. And it just feels like they're all almost protesting the fact Jack Ross was sacked.
Well, they look that way. Yeah. You look at some of them, I forget what game. I think it was not this game, but the game before against Burton. I think Lynch loses the ball in the run through and he puts his arms down and he just starts like walking. And I think, I mean, and I know that's only one sort of specific example. It could look a bit like a straw man sort of argument there, but little things like that are very telling of where the integrity is and where the morale is at the club. And I think it is sorely depleted right now.
Yeah.
And how do you talk somebody into joining the club right now? So you've got January coming.
Mm-hmm. Hey, if you join us, right, we can get draws against the likes of Rochdale.
But then you've got things.
Heck yeah,
we can take draws all day against Gillingham.
The whole club's disjointed from top to bottom. I mean, we've got chairman walking out. That's the finishing. I mean, we've got people who supposedly taken over the club who don't take over the club and give us a loan instead.
We give the company loan of the owner of the club, like not even a loan to the club. It's a loan to
loan to Stuart, isn't it? Basically,
yes.
It's just we're in the oddest situation where if we go to, say, for example, we go to Marcus Madison at Peterborough, who's in a better position than us right now, and we go to him, look, Marcus, come here, join your boyhood club. Nah, you're all right, thanks. I'm quite happy where I am. Yeah. Or I'll probably join a championship club.
I'm quite happy at a relatively successful club in this division rather than one that's in perpetual crisis.
Yeah,
we're now in a position where Wycombe Wanderers is a good team against Sunderland and you have a chance of beating us quite easily. That's so bad, man. Like,
it's devastating.
You know, somewhere like at the top of the table, you look at someone like Ipswich. I mean, fair enough, you're expecting that. But Wycombe Wanderers, you know, they're on a really good run. And when we play them, they will be favourites to win.
But you know why they're on a good run? Because they just run properly. They've got a good...
You're a big fan of their manager, aren't you?
I am, but Ainsworth. He's got quite nice hair. I'm not going to lie. I mean, again, that's entirely ad hominem. But you look at the way that clubs like that are run, and it's just from top to bottom. There is just this like sheer cohesion across everything. Yeah. Like
Everyone's in it together.
Yeah, like I strongly believe that if we did hypothetically poach Ainsworth from them instead of getting Parkinson, they would have got somebody else in. They would have still they still would have been. Like a relatively successful club, you know, that would have at least been like modestly all right for, you know, I mean, obviously Wigan Wanderers, that's not a club of a particularly big stature. They would admit that as much as I'm saying it now, but the way they run is just excellent. They've got an identity that's consistent across the entire club. Mm-hmm. Whereas we, as Anne said there, are disjointed from top to bottom. As you see, you've got a chairman walking out. You know, there's big questions over the recruitment. No one quite knows how that's going. The players seem to have down tools. The manager's gone from this like forward runs, forward passes approach to suddenly let's play seven men behind the ball and take a draw Gillingham. No mm-hmm. one knows what the other person's doing. Like, there is no like communication between anyone. Nobody looks like they have a Scooby what the next person's doing.
Well, for me, I don't think it really matters who the manager is, because Tony Courton is still the head of recruitment, yeah. and it's proven to be not working. So if Kevin Phillips came along, he still has to go through the same recruitment process, and then it'll make him look bad. Mm-hmm. And so that's the problem. So long as we still have the same recruitment, it's not going to get any better. And Phil Parkinson, as much as we'd want him out, they're not going to sack him. Like, they're not going to sack him unless he chooses to leave. They're not going to fire him. So
no.
we're stuck in this position.
I think I said it before as well, and I said it, and when I said it at the time, it sounded like quite a crude comment, but like, I suppose mercifully for me, it does stand. But when Parkinson for me felt like appointing Chris Coleman. We've appointed someone who seems to be a reputable personality, but is ultimately a perpetual loser. Is someone who is in recent times known a lot of failure and probably dines out on a few sort of like shards of success. Coleman took Wales to the, you know, he took them very far into the Euros, but prior to that, he was known for failing at various different football league clubs. Parkinson equally, okay, Methven banded the line that, yeah, but he got Colchester promoted and kept them in the, where was it, in League One? In the Championship? He kept them somewhere.
Yeah.
He got them up in the Championship, and then Geraint Williams took
them.
Yeah,
exactly. But then again, but then that's ridiculous as well, saying, yeah, but he got them there and kept them there. Well, no, Charlie, he got them up, but then he got sacked.
Yeah.
So he didn't. Like, I mean, I'm not saying that it's a bad thing that he got a team promoted from League One, because that is our objective, but don't lie about his achievements. Because, yes. or at least, don't get well, your
maybe,
facts wrong.
I was going to say, I'd be probably not lying about these achievements. I probably just didn't know.
Okay, but that's equally as terrible. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you're lying or you don't, because what you're saying is you're either prepared to lie to the fans about who you're appointing, or you don't know enough about the bloke you've just appointed to be the manager. Both of those are quite worrying. But anyway, he's gone now. Let's focus on Parkinson. Parkinson failed at Bolton, okay?
Yeah.
He did. Right, Bolton were a failing club, but he had only known loss after loss, week in, week out. He had known constant, unrelenting failure.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've just taken a bloke on who's had loss after loss, who's used to losing.
And it's no coincidence that Stuart Donald leaves Twitter and then he brings in Phil Parkinson. He knew exactly what was going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he knew exactly the backlash he was going to get from that. And so that's why he done it, leaving the social media realm. And it's, you know, started off as not too bad. You know, that 5-0 win against Tranmere, I thought, okay, maybe something is in this. And then we beat Southend barely, who were an absolutely dreadful team.
Mm-hmm.
We just beat them by one goal, which that's not really anything to get excited over. I know it's a win, but still dreadful. And just losing every week to teams like Shrewsbury, teams like Gillingham, teams like Burton, who have become a bogey team for Sunderland, by the way. Seem to have never beat them since the first 2-0 win.
When did we all, you know, there's been like a point I've noticed in the past like fortnight, right, where everyone started saying Shrewsbury. Have we always done that?
It's definitely Shrewsbury.
I've always said Shrewsbury, like turning of the shrew, you know.
Yes.
But like for some reason, like recently, like I've just noticed this. Like it's just everyone I've noticed.
Yeah,
everyone's starting to say Shrewsbury Lords, and I don't get it.
But, even people from Shrewsbury will tell you it's Shrewsbury.
I think I've just always
listened to Soccer Saturday, and that's how they say it. Shrewsbury.
I mean, you know, it's not really a deal breaker for me. But.
Yeah,
I've seen the steam come out of your ears, Alex. Fuming about it.
Fewming.
Fuming. Okay.
We all are anyway, aren't we?
Yes. And so this is a daft question, but I've got to try and find some positivity. Anything from that game that you saw from the team in any shape or form that was like, okay, that was not too bad. That was something that we could maybe build on. Is there anything?
White came back from his injury, didn't he? That's a start.
What, White's capable of White's anatomy is capable of repairing itself like every other human's body.
There we go. Yeah. So that's a positive.
White did have a shot from outside the box, which just missed. I remember that as well.
We should have scored about 60 minutes in once.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We actually had a few chances. Gillingham, of course, had one shot on target, I believe, and that was the one they scored.
But that's deceptive because they had about 30 shots and all of them were off target.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And let's go back to the goal, though. I'm sorry, we have to. The goal, as I say, it falls to the defender. He's given a lot of time on the ball to turn. And like a centre-back, was he a centre-back? He's a right-back, I think he was. But But he managed to finish like a centre-forward should, like Will Grigg should be finishing. And how do you let someone with that much time on the ball? It's just not right, especially at this level.
Well, I think what it shows is that what you'll find with the average League One defence, which I'm afraid we do have, is that there's always the like margin for error, maybe like once per game. I often expect League One teams to drop the ball at least once like that. So you have to compensate for that by, you know, having some like attacking threat and intent. But when you're playing for a draw, and when, as Mr. Parkinson says, you would take that all day, then you incur a consequence like that because we don't create, because we're putting seven uncreative players in both defence and midfield. You've got 09 there and you've got Gregor McNulty who, you know, for various reasons aren't good strikers at the moment. Mm-hmm. So when you have a team that has never, like, I looked at that team and I thought, that team looks like it couldn't score in about, that team looks like if it could play for a decade consistently, it wouldn't score because it just looked like there was no goals in it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally, you can imagine my sheer surprise when, you know, we do concede because we, like I say, we had one moment of complacency, but then because we couldn't capitalize, you know, we lost. And I know there's the argument to be made that maybe that goal shouldn't have been disallowed, but you know, we can't just blame the officials for absolutely everything. I know that they're crap, but we can't blame them all the time. We have to make our own look at some point. Yeah. Other teams in this league, like, you know, you've got Rotherham who went and like Hoyd Southend 7-1. You look at teams who can just score for fun when because they're well drilled and they're just organised and they're positive. And we're just not. And again, we can't just point the finger at the officials because it makes us look weak. There are other teams in this league that suffer from bad officials, but like I say, they make their own luck and they win games regardless because they know that they need to have enough in them, enough character, enough skill, enough ability. The ability's there in our team, but the character's not. Because we're just, I think we all, fans included, we all just want to point the finger at the officials.
Again, we can't blame the officials. We can't bemoan officials' decisions when we're going for a draw against Gillingham. So we should have easily be putting three or four past a side like Gillingham.
Of course. Yeah. What, like last season, you mean?
Yeah, like last season.
So then that, as I say, that's an indicator of how backwards we've gone.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, you would hope that they're bringing this manager in the hope that, okay, so we obviously believe he is more capable than Jack Ross of getting us promoted. And so you'd hope that that would mean better results, but we haven't. We've gone backwards. And so we're not going up this season, I'm sorry to say. And to be honest, it's probably not going to be very long till we mathematically can't get to the playoffs. So that's great. And that's why things need to change. But as I say, we need to change in the recruitment side of things, as well as the manager, but until the recruitment changes, we're going to still struggle.
Nice fun stat for you here, Johnny. Sorry, if you were to look at the form guide over the last six matches, which I believe coincides with Parkinson's tenure, we would be, if the season started with Parkinson, based on how he's been playing, would be 16th right now.
Only 16th, I'd be lower than that.
we would be 2 points off the relegation zone.
Okay, right. Yeah, that's about accurate.
Well, that's depressing.
Yeah, anyway. That. We're in relegation form, lads.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
The way it is.
In League One.
But the thing is, though, like eight losses from 12 is relegation form.
Yeah.
There's no two ways about that.
Yeah.
That.
How have we been beat 8 times in 12? What's going on?
That is bloody terrifying.
Like, by the way, I'm happy to own when I'm wrong. When I saw Parkinson come in, I thought, oh, I think we might do okay.
I agree.
But I'll own up to it. I was wrong. Clearly, all the people who doubted him, you are right. You were correct.
Congratulations on being correct and
incorrect on Sunderland being crap. Well done.
You're obviously too much of an idealist to assume that things could actually become better.
At this stage, why would Kevin Phillips even want to come here?
Yeah, exactly.
Why would he want to? I mean, I know he loves Sunderland, but yeah,
but what would he gain? Because as you say, there he's going to have a failing recruitment team to obviously supply him with the players he needs or allegedly needs. He's taken the club at its, by far, its worst point in history. The fans are already disconnected. The players' morale must be absolutely depleted. You know,
all you Sunderland fans who travelled out to Gillingham deserve knighthoods. Every single one of you.
Oh, absolutely.
How on earth are you guys I mean, you still manage to consistently get to every single game despite what we're going through is very commendable. And I'm glad that we have supporters like yourselves there. But honestly, something needs to be done. And the people won't protest, like in the terms of boycotting games. There'll be a small handful. Okay, we've got a small handful, but the boycotting games, it doesn't happen. Some football fans just don't boycott games, which I think needs to happen, but it won't.
And it's a testament to the brilliant support, I think.
But. Yeah. If you just look at, we're going to look at some of the questions here from fans. We have one from 1973, Macam. Look at all the Everton social media and see how Ferguson has lit up all the Evertonians with passion and desire to win, and they did. Bring back Kevin Phillips ASAP and stop the rot. We've been papering over the cracks last season and are in free fall. It's time to act now.
Bring back Roy Keane.
I mean, yeah, it's at the stage though. I mean, we look at that question there and bring back Phillips. But as I say, who really wants to come here? And I don't see anyone.
If I'm going to play like devil's advocate as well with that, if the point that that person's trying to make, I believe, is that with Darren Ferguson, Everton have got someone who's in his galvanising the fans with like raw passion and energy.
Yes,
but like I don't think Phillips is that kind of person. Like if you ever listen to like how he talks and like carries himself,
yeah,
he's quite like reserved and calculated, a bit like Ross. And I mean, while obviously like the name and the figure alone, just like the sheer reputation, would galvanise the fans to an extent. He's not going to like be like roaring them on and rallying them. He would sort of like, he would do his job in a more like reserved way. So I think if that's what you want, and then you don't want Phillips for that. You'd want somebody else. You'd want, like Ant says, you'd probably want someone like Roy Keane. Yeah. But that again,
we're not
that's
get Roy Keane,
no, of course not.
And then we have one from AJ Wallace or CT79. Could yesterday be a pivotal / historical day for a club long in the memory for us fans? Has it been any worse for generations? It was grim yesterday, and I can't see it improving anytime soon. I know we've been through relegations, two consecutive relegations. Was the championship season worse than this, or is this worse?
Oh, this is worse.
Oh, of course, this is worse. 100%. Because it's just, right. It's the same. You lose and load, and you're disappointing, but then the teams that are beating you are even worse than teams that beat you up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and, yeah. Logically, it's a lot worse.
Even in a relegation battle in the Premier League, you're still playing the top teams in the country. And
yeah.
I guess,
oh, yeah.
You know, I'd rather take that than mid-table mediocrity in League One. And if we're lucky, we'll get mid-table mediocrity at this stage.
Yeah, at least in the Premier League. I remember, like, we were saying earlier, weren't we, that when we got beat 4-1 at the time by Man City when Poyet was in charge, you know, at least we could applaud Aguero off the pitch because he was an absolute world beater. And, you know, you were getting beaten by a quality team.
Yes.
But, you know, now you're getting beaten by Peterborough and Wigan and
Gillingham.
And Gillingham and Scunthorpe in the Chequered Trade Trophy.
Yes.
Do you think his job is unattainable? Asks SCFC Macam 73.
What does that mean?
Basically, is now maybe untenable, just like.
Untainable. He has to go.
Do you think he just has to, like. I mean, he has to, but do you think he will? Like, I mean, I said he won't get sacked, but do you think he would walk?
I would like him to, because I don't think he's very good.
would he?
Just spoke my words right there. It's great, man.
I don't think he will, though. I think
he's not going to walk, is he? No. I mean, he's given two and a half year contract?
Yes.
Oh my!
Wonderful. That's great.
I mean, I'm not one that. Like, I mean, I don't like to dwell on negativity. I really don't. But if he stays in charge of this club for any sustainable period of time, and we are going to be a broken football club for a long time.
So London versus South Shields could be a football fixture that's not just friendly at this stage.
About 2 years' time.
Sunderland RCL be a derby if you're not careful.
At Davey, the coach, says, can Phil Parkinson be trusted with a transfer pot to bring in the right players?
Absolutely not. Why would he trust somebody who's incapable of managing the players that he has now?
Yes.
Players like Aidan McGeady, who are proven international footballers, and now we can't even get an attacking note out of them. They don't attack, they don't do. It's if he's telling them to go out there and do that, then fair enough, it's all on him. But the players are just not playing for him. And if we're to sort of spend sort of like 5-6 million in January of this 10 million loan that's been given to War Stewart. I can't see players coming here and being Having any confidence instilled in them by this manager?
Mm-hmm. Well, so you talk about that 10 million loan. So basically, we can sack Phil Parkinson, but it would cost that.
Yes.
So we have the choice of either using that to get rid of the manager and bring in someone who can only rely on free transfers and loans, or keep them and let them spend money. Mm-hmm. So that's the... I guess it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? A vicious circle.
What do you think is the best option there, then?
I really don't think, as I say, with the way the recruitment's set up, I don't really think it makes a difference.
No, I agree. I don't think there's... I think complete overhauls in need of all the staff there, basically. We've got a losing mentality, which has remained throughout the whole club.
Yeah, I think one question actually we're going to go on to here, which is quite fitting at this stage. Red Jasper 73, what needs to change and how? In my opinion, just sacking the manager won't work. It goes much deeper than that. The current group of players are not working. Recruitment, not working. Tactics, not working. Leadership from top, not working. So the question I was going to ask is, which players need to go? And I know it's easy to say all of them, but if you could pick maybe three players that need to go, who would you say?
McGeady, Greg, and...
I would agree with them too.
Somebody else. I don't want to get rid of Ledbetter. I think he's probably he's probably a really good force in the dressing room.
Tom Flanagan.
When things are going well. I don't even mind Tom Flanagan.
Well, I think he's dreadful.
I'd say Gregor McGeady for certain, because of wages and whatnot, and things that locks up.
Yes.
Unlocks wage budgets and things like that. Get them out of the club. They're obviously detrimental to the team that Parkinson's trying to send out there on a Saturday now.
Mm-hmm. I think Will Grigg, as you say, and McGeady needs to go. Now, Will Grigg, he'll go somewhere else and he will score goals because he'll play the right style. And good for him, you know, great that he's getting to do what he enjoys. But it's not working here. And we continue to persist with a player which the system doesn't work. So just get rid of him. If he does go and score goals elsewhere, then that's great for him, but it's nothing to do with us, and it's clearly never going to kick off here for him, unless we bring in a former Wigan coach who knows how to play him. But other than that, may as well.
I'm so depressed.
Yeah. And McGeady, again, he is someone who clearly is not happy with Jack Ross being sacked, because I felt he played much better. He played well under him. I think it's the best we've seen him play for Sunderland.
I don't think he did. Nah. Personally, I think he'd play well for 15 minutes and he'd do nothing for the rest of the game under Ross.
Yeah, I mean...
But I mean, he was turning games on his head by himself.
But that tells you how bad he's been, because those 15 minutes in those games where that was the best we'd seen him play.
Yeah.
And this season, he's just done nothing.
There's nothing.
He scored the penalty against Burton. Whoop-de-doo. Wonderful. But other than that, no, he's terrible. Again, another player who probably will do well elsewhere, but we just need to focus on ourselves. And if it just doesn't have the chemistry, just doesn't work, then move them on. Simple as that. Really. I mean,
we used to blame the egos. Remember, it was the egos that was the fault. And now we've got no real big egos at the club now.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we blame now?
Yes,
we can whinge all day about Phil Parkinson or Stuart Donald or Charlie Methven leaving.
Mm-hmm.
How do we turn this around? How does the club become successful again after a result like yesterday? I mean, it's quite fresh in the mind. We've just been beat 1-0 off Gillingham. We're 11th in the league. We're destitute, aren't we? We're absolutely... Mm-hmm. I can't see any light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. It's like every week, it's a new low. Every single week.
Yeah.
It's we've reached a new low. And the next week, another new low. Keeps on happening. And we just so happen to be getting a visit from Simon Grayson's Blackpool next weekend. So that's wonderful. Well,
that narrative writes itself, doesn't it?
Yes. He wasn't written in a good light in this Sunderland documentary, he will tell you. And now he can have the moment in the sun. You know, be like, oh, well, he's come back and he's got his revenge for the way he was treated by Netflix or whatever.
I quite liked him. When Grayson was appointed, I thought he was the natural progressor to... whoever it was that was in charge before. I forgot. Moyes, wasn't it?
Yes.
I thought he was. I thought he would have came in, got rid of the big egos, and still there's nothing.
Yeah, I honestly, we're going on a bit of a tangent, but I believe he was probably better managed than Chris Coleman. And I know that Chris Coleman had a big personality, but that was all he had.
Yeah. No, I think we all liked Chris Coleman. He was a nice bloke. But his managerial acumen was left a lot to be desired. There was basically... Oh, we're an absolute basket case, aren't we? We've had every manager under the sun who's capable of doing a job who are completely incapable of doing the job.
Yes.
It is so baffling. Like, we're just...
Like, some Sunderland fans will say, bring Neil Warnock in. You really think Neil Warnock is ever going to come to Sunderland?
I would love to have Neil Warnock, but he would need money.
And, I mean, even Tony Pulis. I mean, like, even he would do... He would be awful to watch, but he would get results out of the team.
Hangover has progressed.
But my gosh, he would, again, another manager who, that shows you how bad it is, he would do a better job than Parkinson. But again, he would want money to buy players, and we don't have that. So
we don't have a Pulis team, so we'd have to completely revamp everything.
Bring Charlie White up front is fine for him, though.
Yeah, but he's going to be injured.
He'll be injured, and that'll be the end of that, and be back to square one. And again, another manager who will do well elsewhere struggles here. Mark Triggs. Okay, so this is the important question. You see, when we get promoted with 100 points, which route should the bus parade take?
Go away. Oh my god. When we get 100 points, the bus parade will probably go straight off the Queen Alice.
Not off the new one.
No, we'd keep that. That's the most positive thing the area's had in a long time.
Yes, indeed. That was Mark Triggs. Thank you for that question.
Apart from Gala Bingo. I mean, everyone likes a Gala Bingo.
Everyone loves a good Gala Bingo, yes. Yeah. Mark Triggs, if you are listening, where would you have the bust parade go? Let me know what you would do.
How would Triggsy get back?
Come on, we've had nothing positive. Let's hear from you. I want to know something, just something good. Anything, and this bus route I'm very interested in.
I want a bus parade for our next win.
Yeah, but that may as well. That's how bad it is. Let's just have an open top bus celebration for potentially beating Blackpool.
Every point we get, let's have a bus parade. Let's just do it.
Blackpool is now a better team than Sunderland. Yay.
I'm going to vomit.
And that's not just because you're hungover.
That's not nice.
You know, we can't really say much more about this this time as a Sunderland fan. We'll just get this bit out the way now. Sunderland play Blackpool next week, as we've said. What's your score predictions? And if there is any goal scorers, if you think by some miracle they've learned how to score, who would they be?
It'll be 1-2 to Blackpool. I don't care who scores for Blackpool, it's just going to happen. We will barely get out our own half like we did against Gillingham in the first half. And second half, we'll have a bit more of an attack, but Blackpool will steal 2 on the counter and we'll inevitably come back here, do this, and whinge about Phil Parkinson.
Yeah, and then he will tell us how, if we got a point against Blackpool, that would have been an amazing point. Wonderful. Everyone who's listening, I'm sorry, this is a very unprofessional podcast, but, there comes a time when you support Sunderland, there comes a time when you're like, well, what can we say, really? I mean, what is there to say anymore about this club? Because every week it's the same thing, same disappointment, and it's just like... there's only so much you can talk about. This is why an open top bus parade, Alex taking pictures, is more exciting than talking about Sunderland Football Club.
To be fair, it was amazing.
Yes. Yeah. But we're going to end on a high note. One thing that we have had this week that was brilliant, Sunderland Soup and Kitchen Food Bank fundraiser.
Oh, absolutely incredible.
Incredible. Absolutely wonderful. We have a £16,000 target. This is when I was recording, but this might have gone up to, we might have passed the target by now. At this stage in talking, we did have £15,881 raised, which is incredible. There are things like that when football is second to something as incredible as this. All the fans, everyone has put money towards it. Thank you so much. You've all been incredible. And
well done, everybody. Absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we do actually, if you look on at Rucker Report Pod, we do have a pinned tweet and you can find the link down there if you want to donate any more money towards this great organisation. Thank you once again for everyone who's got involved.
Please read Tom Albrighton's piece on being at the soup kitchen the other day as well. It's a great piece, very emotional, but he's done some good work there and filled me with pride.
We SAFC fans look after each other. This is who we are. We aren't a negative fan base. We aren't uneducated Northerners. We care about our people, our region, our city, and what it represents. Doesn't belong to anybody but us. And this is why money like this, just wonderful. It really is. So thank you once again. I know I've said that enough, a lot of times, but it can't emphasize just how good it's been.
If this podcast was just us repeating thank you over and over again, it would be better than what we've just been talking about before this.
Yeah. And as for me, in terms of the game next week, yeah, we're going to lose and we're going to get beat without scoring. So that's all I'll say. I don't know what the score is going to be. I don't really know how much of an attacking side Blackpool are, but they'll probably score enough to win. So Simon Grayson, congratulations for your win on your return to the Stadium of Light next week. And with that, this has been your host for the Rookham Report podcast, Johnny. Alex, thank you very much. I know you've gone, but thank you for your...
Well, looking at a derelict chair. Yes. Yeah, it's fine.
Well, you'll listen back, Alex, and just remember we thanked you at the end. Go and thank you, Anth, for joining, despite the fact that you probably should just be in bed at this moment.
I'm probably about to die on the way home. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yes, well, thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time, and hopefully we have a slight positive thing to talk about. Farewell.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.